And this morning I'm going to speak about hell. And what is hell? And is it a real place? Or is it just a curse word that you hear out in the world? And who's going there? So this morning, I want to look at how the Bible describes hell and what the experience will be like for those that are in hell. Because, yes, it is a real place. It is a real place for those that go there. And then I'd like to think about who is going to go there. So in general, the Bible teaches that hell is a place of torment, and it's prepared not only for the devil and his angels, but it's also for those who have not accepted Christ as their Savior. So those who are sinners and those who are wicked, those are the people that are going to be going to hell. And as I talk about hell this morning, I'm not going to be going into detail a lot about the terms as far as that are used for hell in the Bible, but I'll go over them in general, but I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about it. But I do want you to understand that the Bible does describe hell with different terms. So as you're reading through the Bible, you'll come across different terms that it doesn't say hell, but those terms refer to hell. So there's terms like unquenchable fire, black darkness, the furnace of fire, or fire and brimstone, the smoke of their torment, and the lake of fire that burns with brimstone. All those phrases or terms, they're used in reference to hell itself. Oh, there's another one, that phrase that's used that I missed here, where the worm never dies, and the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. So they're, you know, it's referring to hell, but it doesn't come right out and say that this is hell. So briefly, just looking at the three other main terms that are referenced as hell, you'll run across. Sheol is more of an Old Testament term that's used in referring to the place of the dead. It's not a graveyard, but it's a place of the dead where the people go when they leave this life. And it's a place that's used in reference to both the righteous and the unrighteous. So Sheol is a place where people go that was mainly used in the Old Testament. Then Hades is used in the New Testament, and it's the part of Sheol where the sinner or the wicked goes when he dies. And in essence, that's hell. While on the other side, the righteous and the saved go, which is paradise. So if you think of the story of the rich man and the beggar, they were both in Sheol. The one was in Hades, and then the other one was in paradise, and there was this great divide in between them. And when I picture that great divide, I think of something like the Grand Canyon, and it was probably even bigger than that. But there was this great divide in between them, but yet, you know, somehow they could communicate, and they could see. It seems like they could maybe see. I'm not sure exactly how all that was. But then there is Gehenna, and that is the picture that Judy's referring to. The way I understand it, that's more of a New Testament term that's used for hell, which is the lake of fire. And this is the place where the people that are held in Hades are cast into on the last judgment, as referenced in Revelations 20. As you read through that, it says hell is cast into the lake of fire, and I think that's referring to Hades is cast into the lake of fire. And that's the eternal hell, which is also, you know, that goes on and on and on, which of course Hades is everlasting, it goes on also. So it can be somewhat confusing, but like I said, I'm not going to go into that in a whole lot of detail right now. But what it boils down to is that there is a heaven and there is a hell, and you're going to be going to either one or the other. Life doesn't end at death. You know, we're going to, when death comes for each one of us, we're either going to, and as I talked about the last time, there's going to be a judgment, and we're going to go to either one or the other. So for our text scripture, if you would turn with me to Matthew 25, verse 30 to 46. And as I read through this, there's probably several messages that could come out of this parable. I'm going to pick up at the end of a parable, but then Jesus kind of goes on to explain that. But my primary focus is going to be on its reference to hell. So I'm going to jump in at the last verse of the parable of the talents. And then Jesus, he starts to explain how we will be judged. So let me read that portion of scripture in Matthew 25, verses 30 to 46. "And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping, gnashing of teeth. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, which is the judgment seat. And before him shall be gathered all the nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth the sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was a-hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a-hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a-hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an-hungered, or athirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not unto one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal." So here we as people, I think, are compared to sheep and goats, where I think that kind of picture a livestock roundup. The sheep and the goat, they're rounded up and they're put into a corral, so to speak. And the shepherd, he's dividing the sheep and the goats out in the judgment. It's kind of like a judgment. He's dividing, he might be dividing, you know, say, you know, he wants the sheep to go over here and the goats to go over here. So as you think about dividing, it's probably easy for you to visualize. If you've moved within the last 5 years, you probably had a box of things that you had to decide whether you had to pitch or give something away or whether you had to save something. You had to divide that box into different things. You had to make a judgment. And so as I shared in my last message, there will be a judgment made by God on our behalf at our death. And in this case, the sheep who are metaphorically righteous, you know, they're going to go to heaven. And the goats who are sinners, they'll go to hell. And because of our goal as Christians, you know, we want to go to heaven. And we don't often focus our attention on hell that much. And rightly so, because, you know, my focus is on heaven. It's not, my focus isn't on hell that much. So we don't necessarily focus on hell a lot. But I think it's good to think about it because hell is a place. And I'd like to look at 7 descriptions of hell this morning that's found in the Bible. And 2 of them are found in this passage that I just read here. The first is found in the verses are verse 41 and 46. And it says that hell is an everlasting place. And so I'll just read those again. Verse 41 says, Then shall he say unto those that are on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. So it's an everlasting fire. And then verse 46 says, and these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. So when you think of something everlasting, I don't know what you think of, but it means that it's something without a beginning and without an end. And so when I start thinking about that, something without a beginning, without an end, my mind starts going in circles, and I start finally just throwing up my hands, and I can't figure it out. It just doesn't make sense to me. How can there be something without a beginning, without an end? It seems like somewhere, infinity, I can't comprehend it really. But I choose to accept and believe that God is everlasting. I choose to accept the fact that that God is everlasting, that he is that way, as well as that hell is everlasting and the fire is everlasting and what's in it is everlasting. And I'll talk more about that later. But for now, picture with me one description of hell is that it's everlasting. So I've got a few things I'm going to put up on the wall here. So hell is everlasting. For the second description of hell, it's very similar to the first, in that the fire of hell is unquenchable. In Matthew 3, verse 12, John the Baptist was prophesying how Jesus would come and how he would separate the wheat from the chaff. And I think we'll just turn there and read that, Matthew 3, verse 12. And this is talking about, I'm going to jump in here a little bit, but whose fan is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor and gather his wheat into the garner, but he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire. So this fire, he's going to burn up this chaff with unquenchable fire. There again, when you think about unquenchable, that, like I said, it's sort of like everlasting. It's kind of hard to understand unquenchable. But instead of the sheep and goats now, we're compared to wheat and chaff, which is the wheat. If you think about it, wheat is the desirable part, while chaff is the undesirable part, or that's compared to the sinner. So when you go out into a field after the wheat has been cut, and back then I'm not sure exactly how, they bound it together, they brought it in. The wheat would be cut and brought in, and then it would be thrashed. And what was normally done is they would use a flail, and they would a flail is a long stick you could grab a hold of, and it was joined with a shorter stick, and it was flexible, kind of like nunchucks back in the days when I was younger. They were big, and you could swing the flail. You could swing, and you would hit this pile of wheat that would be on the ground. And it would knock the kernels of wheat off the stalks. And then the chaff, which was the stalks of wheat and the husk that was on the wheat, that was taken off. And then you would take that chaff and you would throw it in the air with a winnowing fork. A winnowing fork is kind of like a pitchfork, but anyhow, it was a big fork that you'd take that chaff and you'd take it and pitch it up in the air. The wind would catch it and blow it away because it was dry, and then the wheat would fall back down. And you would do that several times, and you would separate the wheat from the chaff that way. And then the grain, as it was gathered up, the chaff was burned then. And that's what this verse is talking about here. But he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire. So this winnowing process, that's what that's called. It's called winnowing. This winnowing process is often referred to as God's judgment in the Bible, where the unrepentant people will be judged by God and discarded like the weak like chaff, to be burned in an unquenchable, never-ending fire. And then the wheat, which is the righteous people, they're saved and used by God. So the fire of hell it's everlasting, it's unquenchable. And the third one, the worm dieth not. Turn to Mark 9, verse 43 and 44. Mark 9, 43 and 44. And this is talking about if you offend a little one. And if thy hand, before that, and then he goes on to talk about, and if thy hand, this is Jesus talking, and if thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands to go into hell and into the fire that never shall be quenched, where their worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. Okay, so there we have the idea of the unquenchable fire again. And it's repeated, that same verse that I just read in verse 44 there, that's repeated two more times with the foot and the eye in verse 46 and 48. It's the exact same verse again. And those verses, they're actually a quote from Isaiah 66, verse 24. It's the last verse of the book of Isaiah, where the worm dieth not. And but the word picture that it describes, you know, it's somewhat of a gross word picture when you think of a worm that never dies. But when any living being dies, whether it's a human or an animal, if it's not taken care of immediately, and just left to nature's course of actions, the fact of the matter is that worms will consume it. And you've probably seen a mouse or maybe a roadkill or something like that was just seemed to be kind of moving with worms as you know, it was left by the road, or you know, it was being consumed by the worms. But eventually, though, those worms, they die because there's nothing more of the host body to feed on. You know, the host body is consumed and it's gone. And the same thing happens with a fire. As long as it has wood or as long as it has some other material to burn, such as chaff, you know, it's going to burn. The fire is going to continue to burn as long as you feed that fire with material. But when the material is used up, the fire eventually is going to die out, just like. But in hell, it says the worm never dies. It's the idea that it's never ending. The source is, which is going to, you know, is never ending. It's a never ending worm. Let me just read that again. Where the worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. It's giving the idea that the fire is not quenched there. And I think the people that are in there, they're going to wish for an end. They're going to wish that this would, the torment would stop, but it won't stop. It's never ending. There's a saint called Bernard, and actually there is a saint, a literal saint called Bernard, and he made a quote that said, he said, "The worm that never dies is the memory of the past, which never ceases to gnaw the conscience of the impenitent." And I agree with him that the sinner's memories or regrets, I think, are going to plague him in his misery. He's going to be thinking about what he could have done, his regrets, and his memories of what he did, wished he wouldn't have done. And it's going to plague him forever and ever. It's going to be there in his mind. So turn now to Revelation 14, verse 10 and 11. And I think I'll also read verse 9 for context. Revelations 14, we'll start in verse 9. And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, "If any man worship the beast and his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation. And he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of his holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascendeth up forever and ever, and they have no rest day nor night, who worship the beast and his image, and whosoever receiveth the mark of his name." So, maybe I'll go ahead and put up the fourth one that we're going to talk about. It mentions smoke here. I lost my spot here. Let me find it. Okay, so probably most of you have found out that smoke is irritating to your eyes. You've been in around bonfires, or you've been around fires and been on the wrong side of the bonfire, and the smoke has blown on, and your eyes, you get irritated. And sometimes if you're burning trash, or someone else is burning trash, you've maybe smelled things that don't smell good. You've maybe smelled plastic shingles, tires, oil, or you know, just smells that don't smell good. Maybe it was sulfur, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But when you see smoke, you know that a fire is burning, and it's going to be a visible stench to those that are burning in hell. The smoke that is coming up, I think it's going to be a, it's not going to be a pleasant place to be at all. It's going to be a smelly place. The smoke, if you contrast that smoke that smells in hell with the smoke of the incense that comes from the prayers of the saints, when the seventh seal is opened up in Revelations 8, 3 and 4, it talks about when the seventh seal is opened up that the incense of the prayers of God's saints are wafting up to God, and it's a pleasing smell to him. Just imagine incense smoke. Maybe some of you don't really care for it, but the smoke of God's saints, or the incense of God's saints that are praying, that as that comes up to God, it's really pleasant to him. It's a pleasing smoke to God, in contrast to the smoke from hell, which I don't think is going to smell good at all, which I personally don't think we're probably going to smell that, those of us that are in heaven. But so for the fifth description of hell, hell is a place of torment. You know, in life we can handle a punishment that we know is coming. If you know a punishment is coming, you can take your licks and you can learn from it and go on with it in life. And even if we're tormented, you know, by someone, you know, we know it's going to pass with time. But imagine being tormented day and night by your worst tormentor with no end in sight, not even death. And those in hell are going to be tormented with fire and brimstone forever and ever, because they're never going to be consumed. And I'm going to put the we also have brimstone mentioned. So we generally know what fire and brimstone is. I mean, we know what fire and smoke is, but what is brimstone? It's a brimstone that's talked about in hell. Revelations 19:20 says that the lake of fire, or Gehenna, or hell, is burning with brimstone. In Isaiah 30, verse 33, it says that the breath of God is compared to a stream of brimstone, And I think that's probably lightning. I've been told that if you're close enough, or I've read that if you're close enough to a lightning strike, that you smell a sulfur smell from the lightning as it goes through the ozone layer. I've never really smelled that, but it says there in Isaiah that the breath of God is compared to a stream of brimstone. And from what I've read in the Bible dictionary, the word brimstone, it comes from a Hebrew word. It's pronounced gopher, or it means gopher wood. And gopher wood has a resinous yellow sap. It's similar to pine sap or pine gum. And I know that I've already taken pine gum, and I've taken it and lit it. And that pine gum is kind of a black, it lets a real black smoke comes up from it when it burns. It does burn. But brimstone is kind of a yellow sulfurous rock that must, I think, look like a little bit like gopher wood sap. And we know that sulfur, it will burn. It will burn at a high temperature, and it produces a blue flame, and it stinks terrible. If any of you have ever been around sulfur, you know that sulfur doesn't smell good. And maybe that's where the term comes from. It stinks to high heaven. I don't know. But from what I've read, also about taking care of chickens. In times past, chicken houses used to be fumigated for lice they'd build a little fire in the chicken house, and then they'd take a pile of sulfur and put on top of that. And then they would close the door, and the smoke would just fumigate the whole chicken house, and it would get into all the nooks and crannies, and it would kill the lice on the chickens. So, that sulfur smell, that I think that's going to be part of the smell that's in hell, is going to be really smelly. And, by the way, sulfur is used to make gunpowder as well as explosives. It's used in chemicals, insecticides. But hell is hot enough for that sulfurous brimstone to burn, creating that smelly smoke. And also, for the last description of hell, it's found in several places, but I've chosen Matthew 8:12. Like I said, it's in several places where it talks about the darkness of hell, where it says that the children of Israel that don't believe will be cast into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Let me just read that. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So just imagine hell with all this other stuff, the smells and the smoke and the torment and the fact that it's everlasting. But there's going to be darkness there. It's going to be a place of darkness. Imagine a darkness like a cavern-like darkness. And I'm not sure how all that's going to work. I don't know if the flames aren't going to put light off. I don't think there's going to be any light there. But because it says on the opposite side, I'll get into that in just a little bit. But back to the darkness. In that darkness, there's going to be wailing, there's going to be crying, there's going to be screams of the lost for in eternity, because with all the smoke and the fire and the brimstone. And I'll just read the verse here in verse 12. It says, "And there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." What all that sounds like, I'm not sure, but I don't really want to hear that. On the other hand, in Revelation 21, verse 23, it tells us that heaven's not going to need any light, because it says that we won't need the light of the sun or the light of the moon, because God's glory and Jesus' light is going to be just lighting up the whole of heaven. It's going to be a light place, a bright place. So each of us, it comes back to this, the choice that each of us has to make. We have to make a choice in life. And where are you going to spend eternity? Is it going to be in heaven or is it going to be in hell? So the next time I share, I'd like to pick up with living an eternity, having an eternity of life in heaven, living there with Jesus as the light and God's glory.